Welcome to What's Ailing America with your host, Dr. Rebecca Carling, the world's only court-qualified expert in vaccine-induced diseases. Dr. Rebecca Carlin.
Namaste, and welcome back to another edition of What's Ailing America, one of your most important weapons in fighting the war on truth being waged against the people by the mainstream media. The views expressed on this broadcast are not endorsed by BVS Radio, its staff or management, but represent the views and opinions of the host, guests, and callers. Additionally, the information I share with you is not to be construed as medical advice. Rather, I am merely teaching you what I would do if I were you after much research on each subject. To learn about my work explaining and reversing vaccine-induced diseases, please go to the www.drcarly.com and listen to the interview of myself by the Chiropractic Leadership Alliance to learn how I transformed from a trauma surgeon to a court-qualified expert in vaccine-induced diseases and how the medical mafia has responded to my stepping out of the box. Make sure you sign up for the updates on my site as I send out important information you need to know to my list. I do consults for people and pets with autoimmune disease, seizures, or cancer, and teach you how to reverse these conditions with natural therapies. I have clients all over the world and create your individual protocols based on solely on history alone. You do not need to travel to North Carolina to see me in person. Please call me at 828-294-0662 between 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time any day of the week to learn how I do consults. My phone number is also on my website. I ask you to consider the information I share with you using your own innate intelligence, the common sense you were all given by your Creator. Do not believe anything I tell you. Check things out for yourself, for we have been lied to about everything, and each person must develop the ability to discern the truth for themselves if we are to extricate ourselves from the matrix of darkness that has evolved because we sat by and did nothing. My guests and I love to answer your questions, so feel free to call in. You can use your first name only if you like, and all shows are archived. The numbers to call in are listed on the bbsradio.com website, Station 2, and include the following. Toll-free, USA and Canada, 888-228-4494. Toll-free worldwide, 877-489-6350. You can also use Skype at BBS Radio or PalTalk at bbsradio_com. Every week I will answer the question, what's ailing America, with a different response, as well as share the good news as to what can heal America on many levels. My goal is to assist in the evolution of consciousness on this planet, for awareness of the truth shall set us free. And I know that once enough of us have become aware that we have been lied to about everything, including the fact that vaccines are good when they are actually inoculations with disease and thus are the true weapons of mass destruction, together we will be able to stop this holocaust on the health of people and pets. That truth, when put on top of the mountain of lies upon which this country is built, will cause the entire mountain of lies to crumble. It is time for everyone with a conscience to realize that if you don't stand up for the truth, you will fall for any lies. I can only show you the door. You have to walk through it. The question is, how far down the rabbit hole are you willing to go? Do not be afraid, for the truth shall set us free. And as the weak-willed puppets of darkness are being made visible to the public eye through shows such as this, the once feeble calls for cease and desist are becoming the roaring outcry which will bring about the evolution of consciousness necessary to change everything. The next step in human evolution is to take responsibility for our lives and those in our care, to live in a sacred way, to do unto others in our earth as we would want done to ourselves. So please spread the word about these broadcasts. And remember, as Voltaire stated, we are not only responsible for what we do, but also for what we don't do. I would like to thank the Americans Bulletin for sponsoring this show. The Americans Bulletin is one of the last bastions of a non-controlled, non-corporate press. Recent issues have carried articles on the planned use of water as a weapon of mass destruction, the true purpose behind the Social Security number, whether or not taxes are legal, how the financial system has been tweaked to make you a slave of the state, and what you can do about it, alternative health, the vaccination issue, and a whole lot more. You can subscribe to the Americans Bulletin by visiting the website, AmericansBulletin.com, or by calling 541-773-2756. The Americans Bulletin, because you need to know the truth. Only $40 a year, 6 issues a year. It's a First Amendment forum for free-thinking people. And I'm very excited to report that Janet Phelan, one of the reporters for Americans Bulletin, who's been a guest on this show before, in regards to the probate murders, as well as water as a weapon, will soon be doing my story. And the way that this has come up very quickly is, as you all know, ex-Attorney General of New York State, now ex-Governor of Attorney General of New York State, Elliot Spitzer, has recently been exposed as a scam and a hypocrite, as he was paying $80,000 for his prostitutes. Well, my story is going to show that he was doing a lot worse than that. Elliot Spitzer, when he was Attorney General, was actually requested by the head attorney for the Nassau County Legislature to investigate my son's case. And instead of investigating my son's case and the corruption of multiple Nassau County agencies who conspired together to cover up the sexual abuse of my son and ultimately give custody of him to his abuser as well as take away his mother from him, instead of investigating this case, this lizard known as Elliot Spitzer actually represented the corrupt judge who did this in my federal lawsuit against him and got the case against this judge, Richard Lawrence, dismissed, saying that Judge Richard Lawrence was immune even though corrupt. So it's really funny how it all works out, and I've been having a party for a whole week, very happy that Governor Spitzer is finally getting just the beginning of what he deserves. And we'll see what happens in the future after the story of what he's done to Joey Carley comes out. And I would also like to remind you that I am also now on the republicbroadcasting.org every Wednesday at 12 noon to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for those of you who are able to listen during the daytime. So please do tune into those shows as well, because I am so excited. We are getting so many listeners to both networks. The emails are totally out of control, and if you've emailed me, please be patient. I'm doing the best that I can, but I appreciate all of your support and all of your suggestions. And on tonight's show, we will answer the question, what's ailing America with the diabetes mellitus epidemic? Is it curable? Well, you're going to find out tonight that, in fact, it is, and I must say that my guest tonight, Thomas Smith, is an example of what a lay person, in other words, somebody that's not actually trained in the medical field, can do when they put their minds to it and try to figure out for themselves what's really going on in their own situation. Thomas Smith was honorably discharged, an honorably discharged veteran of the Korean police action and a former gunnery sergeant of the U.S. Marine Corps. In civilian life, he obtained his bachelor's degree in engineering at Cal Poly and did extensive graduate study in control systems engineering at USC and managed his own engineering research and development consulting firm until retirement. This retirement at age 65 was precipitated by a severe case of classic type 2 diabetes. When it became clear that the medical community does not cure this disease, Thomas undertook another research project in the scientific literature to find a cure for it himself. After successfully reversing his own type 2 diabetes, he went on to write Insulin, Our Silent Killer, a how-to book that shows how many can cure their own diabetes. It was at this point that he began to wonder why the cure word seems to have been deleted from the medical vocabulary. He is currently busy full-time researching the nature of the healthcare business, doing radio shows, and maintaining his website, the triple W's, healingmatters.com, and writing articles to get the word out about health-related issues. He's married, a father of four, grandfather of eight, and resides on a small farmstead in rural Loveland, Colorado, where he and his wife manage a small goat herd, raise a few chickens, and generally try to live a quiet and productive life. So I would like to welcome you to the show, Thomas, and I must say the article that you emailed me, Our Deadly Diabetes Deception, proves that you know more about human physiology and especially about this disease called diabetes than any white coat I've ever met.
Oh, thank you very much for having me on your radio show, Dr. Curley. I've been wanting to do this for a long time. You're a great lady, and I wanted to do a show with you for months.
Well, here we are, and we were going to do one earlier, and you suddenly became quite ill, and I would suspect that now you're a target, and they're probably sending a few of those extra special chemtrail planes over your place. But
yeah, we have chemtrails around here a lot, and about a month ago, the whole community came down with a serious case of flu, and
interesting.
It was all at identically the same time. There wasn't much opportunity for the vectors, you know, the transmission vectors to take it from one individual to another. Everybody came down with it at once. So it was obvious we got sprayed or something was put in the water or something.
Yeah.
It's pretty obvious. It's the worst flu I've ever had. I'm 78 years old. In fact, I never get the flu. Every year goes by, I never get flu.
Because you never get the flu shot, right?
I never get the flu shot, of course.
Right.
That's one of the big reasons I don't get the flu.
Right, exactly.
But this time I got hit pretty good. I was down for about 10, 12 days, and then I started to recover a little bit, and so I started getting active again and ran out of energy and crashed again. And I'm just now getting over it.
Well, they can't keep a good man down. And your work is so important, and as I said, I was unbelievably impressed with this document that you've written here. Is this available to the public?
Oh, yeah, it's all over the Internet. It was published in Nexus Magazine. It made it around the world, got printed in 13 different languages. We got a thank you card from Dominique de Villepin, the Prime Minister of France, in French, thanking us for writing that article. So this business of diabetes is a worldwide swindle. It's a scam of immense proportions.
I totally agree.
To get the word out is really important.
Well, first of all, I just want to clarify to the listeners, as they probably already know, there's two types of diabetes. The insulin-dependent diabetes is without question vaccine-induced. But there's other toxins, as Thomas will explain to us, especially mold toxins, that can also damage the pancreatic islet cells. But type 2 diabetes, it's very interesting, and as you wrote in your excellent article, the whole history of this situation, in the beginning, they called it insulin-resistant diabetes. And then eventually, once they developed the ability to do serum insulin assays, they realized that these people, you know, actually had very high levels of insulin. And so then they continue to try to figure out what's going on. You know, my profession is very good at figuring things out, but what they don't do intentionally is ever cure things. And you give a very excellent, you know, talk in your paper about this cure word, and in fact it is very true. Once you learn how to cure anything, then you're either, if you're not a medical doctor, you're labeled a quack and or charged with practicing medicine without a license and put in jail. And, of course, if you are a medical doctor, you're not allowed to cure anything, so you can never use the cure word. All you can do is manage disease. But
you've got to have some fun with your doctor. The next time you go down to visit him, you have to bring your checkbook, you know. And while you're standing there with your hat in your hand, try to discuss the cure word with him.
Mm-hmm.
He'll break out in spots and turn all different kinds of colors and stammer and usually run out of the room.
Well, if you could just share with our listeners, you know, wherever you want to go, I would like to have you discuss briefly what you've seen. I know when we were talking before the show, you were telling me that both of your parents were killed by the White Coats. And so that's what, of course, that was their gift to you, to let you start opening your eyes so that you would never trust these minions, which obviously you didn't. But if you could just tell the listeners a little bit about what happened to them.
Well, my mother contracted cancer in 1947, brain cancer of the brain stem. And, of course, there's no cure for cancer then, although there is now, but there wasn't then. And so she was put in a mental hospital because the symptoms were mental symptoms.
Wow.
And these darn quacks were giving her shock treatments and everything else until they finally killed her. It took, took them 6 months to kill her.
Oh, my God.
My father...
I want to ask you a question about that. So how did they determine that she finally... Or how did they finally determine she had cancer? Was it an autopsy done at her death?
Well, no. This was known going in. This was known by the family doctor
who diagnosed
the cancer before she was ever committed to the hospital.
And
but the problem was, it was a mental hospital, and when she gets to the mental hospital, all they have is mental protocols. They don't have anything for cancer. They'd have been done better if they had just let her alone, but they wouldn't even do that.
And knowing she had cancer, they gave her shock treatment?
Yeah, electroshock therapy. Because of the mental symptoms.
If that's not torture, I don't know what is. Oh, my God.
My father, on the other hand, 30 years later, he's retired, and he goes to the Veterans Hospital because he has complaining of stomach ache. He wanted to get some antacid pills from the Veterans Hospital. So he goes up to the Veterans Hospital because it was his unfortunate luck. It was his bad luck that weekend. There are two 30-year-old surgeons on duty.
Uh-huh.
Oh, they took a look at him, wheeled him into the OR, unzipped his stomach, tried to find out what's wrong with his stomach, right? Well, couldn't find anything wrong, so they put him in a recovery room and planned to send him home a couple of days. Well, he developed a raging fever. They obviously, he contracted some kind of infection in the OR.
Mm-hmm.
So back to the OR they go. These two quacks thought they had done something wrong, so they unzipped him again, right, and got into his intestines again to find out what's going on, and that was enough to kill him. He was a 77-year-old man, two major unnecessary abdominal surgeries in the space of 12 hours was enough to kill him.
That'll do it.
And anyway, you can see I don't have a whole lot of regard for the medical committee. I treasure amongst my close friends some MDs that see the light. These are people that know what's going on. They do everything they can about it to combat it. But the average doctor out there, I wouldn't trust him to... He fancies himself as a master of internal medicine. I wouldn't trust this guy to do anything more than sew up a cut, or about 1 out of 10 of them can set a bone correctly.
Mm-hmm.
If you get cut, or if you get lacerated, you need to be sewn up, or you break a bone, you need to have it reset. Don't go to your local clinic. Most of those people don't know how to handle that. Go down to the emergency room at the local hospital. That's where the best doctors that can do this kind of stuff are.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of that, I do not recommend Orthodox American doctor.
I totally agree with you, and what I tell people is that unless you have trauma, you have no business going into a hospital. It's basically just a house of death and suffering. And eventually that is my goal, to cause the death of medicine and to start a whole paradigm shift where we're actually going to, you know, teach people how to heal themselves, because our Creator gave us the ability to heal ourselves. All we have to be is taught how to do it. And as you and I were speaking before the show, and as I've talked on the show before, especially with Dr. Ott, who has an excellent DVD on the history of medicine and how the Rockefellers corrupted things, and starting back with their Flexner Report, where they actually made medical schools all the same, that they had to teach the same disinformation. this is so widespread now, and as we were talking before the show, it's actually gotten to the point now where the doctors are killing people in the hospitals. They're committing euthanasia of the elderly. So you can trust me on this one that the listeners of this show know very well of what you speak and are well aware that the doctors are not their friend. So if you could just start to tell us, you know, how you started your research and what have you discovered?
Well, what happened was when I contracted type 2 diabetes, I had blood sugars of 368, 370. My home, my wife's blood sugar tester couldn't read it. It would print error because it was too high.
Wow.
I didn't find out what the numbers really were until I went down to the local clinic and had him check my blood sugar. He had a better instrument, and so he found out I was running blood sugars, fasting blood sugars of 368, 375 in that area. So he immediately took a look at me. I was about 30 pounds overweight and ran out of energy. I was running to the bathroom every 20 minutes, and my eyes were stinging. I had all the classic symptoms of type 2 diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
So he took one look at me, and he started writing a prescription. So I watched him do that for a while, and I asked him, I says, will this medicine you're prescribing cure this disease? He pretended like he didn't hear me. So we waited for a few minutes until he finished writing the prescription, and as I was taking it from him, I looked him in the eyes, and I says, will this cure this disease? He says, this is the prescribed treatment.
Uh-huh.
Well, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to realize you're being lied to.
Right.
I went down to, took this prescription. I didn't take it to the pharmacy. I took it down to the library, and I got the PDR out, and I looked it up. And I found out not only would it not cure the disease, but what it would do is suppress the symptoms so the disease could make unimpeded progress until it finally killed me.
Yeah.
My wife and I sat, you know, when we found this out, we're sitting across the kitchen table and we're looking at each other. Where do we go from here? Well, it was obvious this bunch of quacks had a plan and a policy, in effect, to kill me. Certainly not to cure the disease.
But I just want to point something out, Thomas, that, you see, they don't even realize that. They are so brainwashed that there is no cure for any diseases and that all you can do is manage the symptoms. So I do want to point that out. Although I will
say... No, it's true. It comes from the way they're trained.
Yeah.
It used to be, in order to become an educated person, you have to go through an academic curriculum in which allows thoughtfulness. If you go through an academic curriculum that's rushed, hurried, intense pressure, insufficient sleep, not enough food, and you do this long enough, you're not being educated. You're being trained.
Yeah.
And you come out of it trained, not educated.
Yeah.
The difference between training and education, of course, is that a trained person has to respond to his programming. That's all he can do. An educated person can thoughtfully consider his options and make the decisions that he wants to make, not the ones he's forced to make.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're quite correct. The same doctor that was willing to kill and cripple me would do the same thing to any member of his family because
exactly.
He doesn't know any better. Most
exactly.
of them don't.
Yeah.
Anyway, what I did, my wife and I sat across the table and wondered what we were going to do. First of all, we're both Christians. We know the Lord. And so we prayed about it and decided that there was no chance at all of getting cured with the doctor. There was not much better chance of that an engineer is going to suddenly find a cure for diabetes. It really looked pretty grim at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Because I couldn't believe that the medical community was as criminal and crooked as it really is. I thought that they were honestly doing their best, and it didn't look like an engineer was going to have much chance to cure diabetes. But nevertheless, it was the only option I had. There were no others.
Yeah.
So I got on the Internet, and I went through PubMed and Springer and Medline, and I started running down to the university libraries and going through these old journals, and boy, I really got into it. It was the most intense research project I'd undertaken in several years. And slowly, the pieces started to come together.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured out what's going on with diabetes. And every time I figured out something or I found out something, I immediately put it into practice. And slowly, over a period of about 3.5 months, my blood sugar dropped back down from the high 360s and 70s, dropped back down to sub 100 milligrams per deciliter.
Wow.
It plateaued out there at around 200 for a while. I couldn't get it below 200 milligrams per deciliter because I hadn't discovered the fat connection.
Okay.
And then I discovered the fat connection and put that into practice, and boom, blood sugar swung right back down in the line.
Well, please do share with our listeners some of the things that you did. But first, I want to ask you, did you ever go back to that white coat and present yourself as someone that no longer had type 2 diabetes?
He found out. We live in a small community. About a year later, I was working around the farm, and I lacerated the skin above my eye, my eyelash.
Mm-hmm.
Had a pretty good gash there, about 1.5 inches long. So I went back down to have him sew it up, and I was pleasantly surprised. The guy has a good hand, needle with a needle, and he sewed it up real well, and it never got infected, even though I didn't use any antibiotics, and it healed pretty well, and it's a barely, barely perceptible scar there. So I have to compliment this same doctor that fancies himself an internal medicine specialist, which he's totally ignorant, but he does have a very good hand with a needle, and he can sew lacerations up pretty well. In the process of doing this, he noticed...
Wait, I hate to say this, Thomas, but so do seamstresses, and you probably would have gotten the same result if you'd gone to a seamstress, but anyways, go ahead.
anyway, he noticed that I'm not diabetic anymore. Because one of the things they did when they checked me out was to weigh me and take my blood sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And now, whenever I run into, occasionally I run into him in a supermarket or something. And when he sees me, he'll go the other way. He does not want to engage in conversation.
Oh, so he didn't even ask you what you did then, huh?
No, he never asked me, and I never told him.
Because you're the enemy now. Because how dare you cure yourself? If word got out what you did, you could put him out of business.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Anyway, it was a couple of years later. A couple more years went by, you know. I was always running into people who had diabetes, and so I'd tell them how to do it. And it was almost 3 years later that I decided, well, why don't I, cross all the T's and dot all the I's and write a book and teach people how to cure their diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally did. It took another 6 months, 8 months to do that. But what I've discovered is type 2 diabetes actually comes in two forms, but they're not the type 1 and type 2 that this bogus classification that the medical community uses. Diabetes does come in two forms, however. One is the form that's caused by toxic food, improper diet, lack of exercise, and just poor nutritional basis. And the other form is the form that comes from pathogenic agents. And in my own mind, when I look at diabetes and I think of the two different forms of diabetes, this is what I see. I don't see the type that's caused by insufficient insulin and the type that's caused by ineffective insulin.
Mm-hmm.
Although that's the way it's typically classified. What I find, as far as the typical classifications, the type 1 and type 2s, what I find is that the typical diabetic falls on a continuum or on a spectrum anywhere from extreme type 1 to extreme type 2. He can fall anywhere along the line there. And many diabetics have insufficient insulin production, and they're type 2s. Many diabetics have ineffective insulin, and they have a lot of the elements of type 1 because they also have insufficient insulin.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole classification scheme for the diabetic, in my opinion, is bogus. It originated from some German medical doctors that wondered what the pancreas in a dog does, and so they took the pancreas out, and they found out the dog's blood sugar goes out of control. Now, this type of classification system is an effort to bring order out of a huge amount of ignorance. And, you know, it should be replaced by a better system.
Well, it also stems from the fact that that's the way that they've classified things for the ease of prescribing drugs. But I also want to just state that it's truly amazing to me that I have so many clients with diabetes, and I'm finding now that even in non-insulin-dependent diabetics, they're starting to prescribe insulin. Because what I realized is that when you give exogenous insulin, there's a negative feedback loop, and it's telling the pancreas that you don't need to work anymore because now you're getting insulin from the outside, and it actually shuts the pancreas down. And so
that's the problem. I've run into that myself a couple of times. When you give a type 2 diabetic insulin, it makes the pancreas lazy.
Right.
And when you try to subsequently correct that, when you correct the insulin resistance, and you try to get the pancreas started back up again, it's tricky to do that. You got to be careful how you do it because sometimes this pancreas doesn't want to start up again.
Yes, exactly. So please tell the listeners some of the things that you learned about that the pancreas needs in order to be able to utilize the insulin, because obviously that's the problem with non-insulin-dependent diabetics. They have plenty of insulin. The body's just not able to use it.
Yeah, well, most of this is to cellular level. Your body is actually not the unitary thing that people think it is. What it is, it's a collection of about 70 trillion cells, all of which have independent lives and existences, and all of which are interconnected with hormonal systems and blood systems and a whole bunch of different systems function to take out the garbage and bring in the nutrition and do things like that for it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happens to these cells is they all respond to hormonal signals. For example, the insulin's a hormone, and when there's glucose in the bloodstream, the pancreas recognizes this and spits out insulin so that the cells can get a signal to uptake the glucose out of the bloodstream because the cells want the glucose as their primary energy source.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happens is this whole regulatory mechanism starts to break down in various ways. With type 2, it's largely at the cellular level. The insulin binds to the cell receptor and starts this biochemical cascade of events inside the cell that results in sending glucose transporters out to the cell surface to pick up glucose. When they get out to the cell membrane, they have to migrate through the cell membrane to special areas called capillary areas. And when they get there, then they look like little dimples, little pits on the surface of the cell. And when the GLUT4 transporters get there, they act like little trucks. They pick up a load of glucose and they haul it back down inside the cell and deliver it to one or more of the mitochondria, which are the glucose-burning Krebs cycle energy furnaces in the cell. This is where the energy gets produced, the ATP gets produced. Well, there's lots of slips between the cup and the lip on this whole process. Anything that causes the GLUT4 transporters to fail to make it to the capillary areas where they can pick up glucose will cause that glucose to remain in the bloodstream and result in a diagnosis of diabetes. And a lot of things can cause that to happen. Perhaps the most important of the things that I've discovered that cause it to happen, and the thing that caused me to plateau at a blood sugar of 200 once, is called the fat connection. It turns out that type 2 diabetes is really not a failure of the blood sugar system. It's a failure of the fat metabolism system. And when fat doesn't get metabolized correctly and used correctly, that results in carbohydrate intolerance and an inability to keep blood sugar under control. What happens with the cells is they get contaminated by an awful lot of toxic fat.
Mm-hmm.
And the fat does a lot of really bad things. For example, one of the things it does is it stiffens the cell membranes, and so the cell membranes start to have a higher cholesterol content and a higher saturated fat content and a higher trans fat content. Well, this higher trans fat content causes the membrane to become stiff and sticky. And so the GLUT4 transporters, when they get out to the membrane, they can't go anywhere. They're stuck. It's like being stuck in the swamp. And so the blood sugar remains in the bloodstream. Fat also plays a lot of internal roles, a number of internal roles that fat plays. In addition to metabolizing carbohydrates in the Krebs cycle, these same mitochondria also burn fat. And when they burn the wrong fats, there's a system in there which I'm just beginning to find out more enough about. I'm not quite ready to go into detail with it yet. But there's a system there called the PPAR system that causes the cells to metabolize the fat correctly so that it does not interfere with the glucose metabolism process. Well, when you get toxic fats, this PPAR system also gets damaged. And so the toxic fats, even inside the cell at the mitochondria level, are inhibiting the use of glucose. So this is a lot of things. It's all, most of type 2 diabetes is cellular, and it affects every cell of your body. And that's the reason it takes so long for it to show up. It typically is called adult onset. It doesn't show up until you're in your at least mid-40s and sometimes later.
But now little children are getting it.
Well, that's because of the increased toxicity of the food supply.
Yes, so please get into that aspect, because you're unbelievably knowledgeable about these things. I'm so proud of you for what you've accomplished. You have more knowledge, as I said, than any white coat that I know. But please help the listeners understand, because you write it so well in your paper, that the distinction in terms of health should not be between saturated and unsaturated, but between junk oils, which are basically, you know, processed oils, versus, you know, the natural oils. That's what the people need to know.
Okay. This is perhaps the key, perhaps one of the key elements. This is not, by the way, this is not the only cause of type 2 diabetes, adult onset diabetes. But
right.
It is
There's
a principal cause.
Right. There's minerals as well, and we'll get into that after this.
Okay. What happens is when you, back in the 1920s, a lot of outfits like Wesson Oil and Crisco and these companies started to make synthetic fats, artificial fats. Back in those days, people were a lot smarter than they are today, and they didn't buy into this. And because they didn't buy into this, the type 2 onset epidemic was delayed. Crisco had to start giving away 2.5-pound cans of this toxic junk free and then claiming that it was kosher before they could get people to buy it. It wasn't until the Second World War came along and America essentially ran out of butter, because the military sucked up all the butter and all the good fats and oils, coconut oils and all the good stuff. And so the American public was left with margarine and Crisco and all of these refined oils that you find in the supermarket today, corn oil and canola oil, and
which is rapeseed oil, correct?
What, grapeseed oil?
No, isn't rapeseed oil called canola oil?
Yeah, it's called canola oil. It's just a
right.
Rape is a weed, by the way. It's just the oil of a weed is what it is. Cottonseed oil is another one.
Wow.
Cottonseed oil is particularly pernicious because cotton is not a food product.
Mm-hmm.
And so they spray cotton plants with impunity with anything they want to spray. And this spray gets on the seeds, which are then sent down to oil processing plants to process into edible oils. If there's one thing that somebody out there wants to do to improve their health, stop eating any of these supermarket oils or any of these refined oils.
Right.
Particularly the big three, cottonseed, canola, and soybean oil.
Mm-hmm.
Don't eat any of those oils. Don't eat anything that contains them. Okay?
And what should they eat?
That's the best thing you can do for your health, right up front.
What should they eat instead? I know coconut oil is one of the best.
Coconut oil is an excellent oil. Olive oil, a virgin olive oil that comes from the first pressing of the olives is a good oil. There are some good oils. But the problem with diabetes is once you've eaten enough of this toxic stuff and you've messed up you've damaged your cellular membranes and you've damaged the PPAR complexes and all the cells throughout your body, you can't just add good oils and switch over to good oils. Because that's not going to help you very much. You're still stuck with 70 trillion cells that are seriously damaged and cannot process oils, fats and oils properly, and cannot process carbohydrates as a consequence.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to do something about correcting all this damage before you can add good oils back into your diet again. Your body has not only lost the ability to process toxic oils, but it's also lost, to a large extent, the ability to process good fats and oils.
Mm-hmm.
This all has to be corrected, and it's a slow and painstaking process. And the way to do it, the way I recommend doing it, is to use fish oil, flax oil, and maybe once a week, cod liver oil. These are highly unsaturated oils that go a long way toward correcting this damage that's been done to your cells, both to the membranes and the PPAR complex.
But I just want to point out that the fish oils and the cod liver oils, you have to be very careful that you're not getting oils that are saturated with mercury
because of what
they've done with poisoning everything. So that's why I instruct my clients to try to stay away from those oils. There are some companies that claim they've taken the mercury out, but I find that very difficult to believe that they could take all the mercury out of those oils.
Well, you're on safer ground if you go for the cold water oils, the oils produced in Norway, cold countries, Scandinavian countries. They tend to be a lot cleaner.
Right.
And if it really becomes a problem, then another thing you can do is to use sardines and very small fish. You can eat these sardines and different types of canned fish. I prefer sardines particularly because they're harvested at a very young age and they haven't had a chance to accumulate a lot of mercury.
Good point.
So sardines make a very, very good diabetic food. For people, it not only contains the right oils, but it tends to have much lower mercury. The problem with mercury is you can't go anywhere in the world today and get away from it.
Right, and that's why it's so important for people to detox themselves. But we only have a little over 10 minutes left, Thomas. So I really want the listeners to gain the benefit of your knowledge in terms of what to do to get out of this hole. Could you now go into some of the nutrients that you feel are very important to help with the glucose metabolism? And I just want to say I agree with everything you said.
Oh, yeah. Good. Basically, you need when insulin binds to a cell receptor, a healthy cell has maybe 3,500 receptors on it. And a diabetic cell has about 2,000 or less insulin receptors on it. And the cell does this, the cell reduces the number of receptors it presents to the outside world as a way to prevent itself from constantly, it's like constantly listening to a telephone ringing that you can't answer. They can't do anything, the interior of the cell can't process the signals from these receptors, so they just reduce the number of receptors. Well, as they reduce the number of receptors, a whole bunch of things goes wrong. These same cell receptors that are used for binding insulin to trigger the glucose uptake, these are the same receptors that bind vitamin C. So your cells become vitamin C deficient, even though there might be plenty of vitamin C in your bloodstream.
Mm-hmm.
So basically what has to happen is you have to recognize that since you only got about half the number of receptors working, it's very important that you make them work right. Now, what happens when a receptor gets triggered by insulin is that there's a biochemical sequence of events that takes place. It's got about 2,000 steps in it. And the end result of that is to get the transporters out to pick up the glucose. So what you need to do is make sure that this biochemical chain of events works right. And that means you have to have all the minerals. It's intensely mineral dependent. You need a lot of zinc. You need a lot of chromium. You need a lot of magnesium. You need manganese. You need basically all of the minerals, because it's the minerals that form the enzymes that make these chains work right. And since you only got half as many chains as you used to have, it's important that you have plenty of minerals and you have a good mineral supplement, a good chelated mineral supplement.
Mm-hmm.
That when I say chelated mineral supplement, that's the kind of mineral supplement that's easily assimilable at some useful level. A lot of these minerals you buy are worthless. Your body only assimilates 1 or 2% of them. So you got to pick out good mineral supplements. There's a lot of detail to go into in this particular area, and perhaps this might be the time to recommend my book.
Yeah.
I wrote the book, Insulin, Our Silent Killer, and the last chapter of the book goes into a lot of this detail about these minerals. It tells exactly what these minerals do. It tells a lot of what these vitamins do. And you really need that kind of information.
How can people get your book?
Okay, we self-publish the book. We sell it all over the world. It costs $29. The title of the book is Insulin, Our Silent Killer. And the way to get it is to send $29 to Thomas Smith, Post Office Box 7685, Loveland, Colorado, 80537. That's Thomas Smith, Post Office Box 7685, Loveland, Colorado, 80537. You can go to the website. I have a website, www.healingmatters.com.
Right.
It has quite a lot of this information on it. And it also has information on how to buy the book if you need more.
Okay, and does that $29, does that include shipping and handling?
That includes shipping and handling anywhere in the country.
Okay.
We charge extra for shipments to Canada and the rest of the world.
Okay.
So
people could email you if they live outside the U.S., because we do have a lot of international listeners. So would you be willing to give out your email address as well?
Sure. They can email me at valley@healingmatters.com. That's valley@healingmatters.com.
Valley, V-A-L-L-E-Y, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
And what happens is we have a brisk email business going here. We freely answer questions through the emails. and we get plenty of them.
Right.
On a typical day, we might get 30 emails, and sometimes I get behind in answering these emails. There's no charge for this. We just freely answer any questions people have, and a lot of people just email me to find out how to buy the book, but a lot of people who already have the book and have a question about understanding in it, they email me, and we answer these questions freely all the time.
Okay, and one thing I have to ask you, hasn't any, government agency charged you with practicing medicine without a license yet?
No,
have you
because I always represent the information I give out as being helpful to improve the communications between the doctor and the patient.
Ah.
And that's what it's intended to do. Of course, doctors are scared to death of patients that have this kind of information.
Right. It's not your fault that the doctors have no clue. Right.
Yeah.
Okay, that's beautiful.
But that's what I do. I tell them that's what it's for. It's educational. It helps improve the communications between the doctor and the patient for the benefit of both the doctor and the patient.
Okay.
Of course, doctors are scared to death of patients that know what they're talking about.
Oh, yeah. I know that. Yeah. The
doctor wants to keep you ignorant. Make sure you bring your checkbook with you when you come, that's all.
Mm-hmm. Well, doctors deserve to make a living. I mean, let's be, real here. Going through medical school is absolute torture, and it costs hundreds of thousands of dollars. But
well, first of all, it shouldn't be torture. It should be an educational experience.
I agree with you, but let me finish. But the point is that after they go through all that, as you said, they're just propagandized. They don't have a clue on how to help anything.
That's
so
right.
why should you pay someone to give you a drug that's possibly going to mask your symptoms, but in most cases just create other side effects and do absolutely nothing for you? Because as you so rightly stated, the disease is going to allow it to progress further, and you're on your way to death. So
right.
that is my problem. Not that doctors shouldn't make a decent living, but doctors should be able to do some good for you. And the doctors who do learn how to heal, and I am one of those doctors, they are attacked and persecuted by the medical mafia. And that's why it's very important for the people who want doctors to be able to help them to support the doctors that give up everything and have their attempts made on their life and things like that in order to do so. The people need to get behind those doctors. That's really important. And that way more doctors are going to start doing the right thing.
Well, one of the points I make in the book, and it's an important one, is that when you find a good doctor, support that doctor as much as you possibly can, not just by paying your bill, but if the guy gets in trouble with his local medical authorities, go to bat for him.
Yeah.
That's one of the important things that people can do to help a good doctor.
Yeah.
But then I also point out that it's important to restrict this to good doctors.
Yeah.
And don't believe every lying quack in town that wants to hook you on some medication,
Yes. As a matter of fact,
move around. Go from, if you don't like what your doctor's doing, go find one that you do like.
Yeah, fire
but
him.
But when you do
exactly.
find one and you find a good one, be sure to support him with all your heart.
Yes. One of the biggest problems we're having now, Thomas, and I'm sure you're aware of this, is that there's all kinds of a movement now towards quote-unquote integrative or complementary medicine because
yeah.
the doctors are realizing that the clients are just, flocking to nutritional supplements and natural healing. So
mm-hmm.
this is one of the biggest scams out there, and I've had many people try to pull me into this mess, and my response to that is I am not going to combine poison with the good stuff. So
well,
I will never support complementary integrative medicine. You don't want to integrate poison with natural healing.
I agree with you, by the way.
The
problem, there's one more subtlety to this, too, that needs to be mentioned.
Okay.
A lot of doctors, fully aware that patients are getting smarter and wanting natural, alternative, and complementary ways of doing things, a lot of doctors are just plain misadvertising. What
mm-hmm.
they do is they tell you that they're alternative, or they tell you they're complementary, or they tell you whatever you want to hear, and then when they get you in the office, they prescribe drugs, as usual.
Yes.
So you got to be really careful and notice what they do, and don't pay all that much attention to what they say.
Exactly. Yes, and actually the doctor that's in charge of one of the major natural magazines now is doing the same things. I mean, it's just totally disgusting to me. His name is Dr. Braverman, and he's promoting this whole idea as well, and of course is just basically involved in, you know, he'll tell you to take vitamin C, but, you know, here's your prescription for all the drugs. Nothing ever changes.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I want to tell you something. You know, I've been pretty hard on the average doctor out there because the average guy out there is a quack. I have yet to find a clinician, at least at the clinic where I used to go, that would even talk to me about diabetes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They basically don't know anything about internal medicine. If you take the PDR away from them, the physician's desk reference, which is nothing but a huge book full of advertisements for drugs, if you take that away from the average doctor, he's helpless.
Exactly.
You know? He depends on that almost almost totally.
But not only that, Thomas, he depends on that only for finding drugs that are indicated for certain diseases and for the dosage. They never read the side effects. It's totally amazing.
Oh, absolutely not.
Yes. It's truly really amazing to me. I have so many clients. I've had some elderly people that are on 20 or 25 medications, and you watch the history of how they got prescribed these things, and they had one medication, and it caused another problem, which when you look it up, it was a side effect of the first medication.
That's right.
But instead of the doctor admitting it was a side effect, they give you another medication for the second problem, which is...
Dr. Carly, if you can get these people unhooked and unraveled from this consequential, sequential medication chain of events that they get involved in, if you can just get them unraveled from that, you know, and get them on clean stuff. It's not sometimes it's not easy to get people unhooked from this medication that they've been on for years. You
well,
know,
that's one of the things that I teach people how to do is to wean off these medications. Because, yes, you're right, in fact, that once you've been on these medications, your body gets addicted to them, and you can't just, in most cases, stop cold turkey. You
That's
have
right.
to do
and,
it in a
it,
very
It really takes
way.
Medical, in-depth medical expertise to be able to,
yes.
to do this.
And that's where my that's the only place, let me say, that all my years of medical school and training, that's the only place it comes in helpful, is to teach people how to wean off their drugs. As far as healing, I learned nothing about that in medical school. And it's just funny how it's all working out. So,
yeah.
Actually, we only have a couple minutes left, Thomas. I just want to say that I am so impressed by you and the wonderful work that you're doing. And I just encourage you to keep on keeping on. But I do want to teach you about a couple of very important words. In case you ever encounter somebody that calls you up and asks you if you can cure diabetes, because I'm sure you've already been sent moles. And by mole, I mean somebody who calls you to ask you if you can cure something and they actually work for the state, and if you answer yes, you're going to be put in jail. So just always remember the words that this is what I would do if I was you. I'm only teaching you this is what I would do if I was you. But you've actually got another very good way of going around that by saying that you're opening up communication. Actually, that's hysterical. I love that one.
there is a good defense against this cure. Since the medical community does not cure anything, I'm certainly not doing anything that they're doing.
Exactly. Well, that's what's such a fraud. How on earth did they manage to co-opt that word cure and claim that for themselves?
That's like you mentioned earlier about the Flexner Report.
Yeah.
And what the Rockefellers did back in 1911. You know, they took over, they created a fantasy world. They turned the whole medical community into a fantasy world of make-believe.
Yeah.
And it's all based on arrogance and one-upmanship and false and phony science.
I totally agree with you. Well, I can't believe how fast this hour has gone, Thomas. We're already out of time, but I just want to say God bless you for what you've done. You are an example to all the listeners. And I must say that my experience with the mothers of the autistic children is the same. They've done more research. They know more than any medical doctor about their child's condition. And that's what you have to do, folks. You have to take responsibility for your own health and wellness. You have to do the research yourself. Do not count on these white coats, these medical devils. They have no clue on how to keep you well. And they will tell you to do the wrong thing just to keep themselves out of hot water. As Thomas and I were discussing before the show, most of these medical doctors now are not even inoculating their own children, for example. So keep up the good work, Thomas, and definitely keep in touch. And I'm so glad you're out there doing what you're doing.
Thank you. I'm sure glad that the Lord's got you busy, too, Dr. Carly.
Okay.
And please keep on keeping on.
I will. And keep in touch, okay?
Okay.
Okay. God bless. Good night.
All right.